Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Now, later on in the programme, I will be talking to Tim O'Donovan from Seed Tech about Arable April. I will also be talking to Matthew Ryan from Chagas. And my final guest this morning will be Rosemary McDonough. And Rosemary is the National Chairperson of the IFA Business Committee. But my first guest this morning is Philip O'Connor. Philip O'Connor from IFAC. He's with me this morning to talk about the IFAC annual farming report that they publish every single year, and it has come out in the last week or so. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you very much for having me on.
Anything standing out in the report for 2020?
Some interesting things, all right. Let's be honest, the proverbial elephant in the room is COVID, so we did ask around it and see how it is affecting farmers and what people thought of it. So I suppose the most immediate one, no different how we're actually doing this interview, which is over the phones, we're no longer able to meet each other. So how did technology play a part for farmers? I suppose there's one couple of questions we asked. And look, it was no surprise that 86% of farmers said that broadband was critical or essential to their business. And it is, it's even ourselves in IFAC, how we do work, it's essential to it. So really what that was, and we did a slight call to action into the government on it, and I know a number of agencies are looking at it, the importance of the rural broadband being rolled out. There's a perception there that farmers are out in the land as such, but they use technology as much as anyone else. And over half the farmers in our survey that were dairy or were livestock farmers are using herd software at some point. Over half the tillage farmers were using precision technology such as GPS, etc. So technology is very much ingrained in the farming sector. So we weren't surprised that percentage of people said that broadband was essential to their business.
Right, so that's one finding in 2020, and I suppose, as you quite rightly said, there's nothing new about that, because the elephant in the room for the whole year, has been COVID. But has then COVID had an effect on the development on farms, with farmers as far as building new sheds or milking parlours or whatever was needed? Did lockdowns affect that?
Well, when we asked farmers did COVID impact them financially, only one in five of them said that. So the vast majority of farmers out there said that COVID didn't impact them financially. And we would have even seen that in IFAC. Now, when I mean impact your financial, we're talking about relative terms here. Most beef farmers are on negative net margins of 4 BPS. So, there was a slight dip in commodity prices this time last year. But things rallied very much towards the back end of the year. And at the moment, there's super prices there for dairy, beef and lamb at the moment. So they're very strong. But I suppose what did impact when we asked about COVID was, I suppose, farmers' social lives. And no different than any of our social lives, if you know what I mean. Well over 70% of farmers said that COVID had a significant effect on their community involvement and their social lives. So that wasn't a surprise. But the other one that came out around COVID as well is we asked farmers, I suppose, when you think about socialising, the mart would have played a huge social part for farmers over the years. Going into mart, meeting other farmers, talking about it, buying and selling animals at the ring. And we asked them about, would they like to stay online post-COVID, if you know what I mean? Would they like to see the mart stay online? And over 70% of them said they would. That was slightly surprising that statistic was so high, that 70% of farmers would be happy to maintain online bidding in mart post-COVID.
Right. And did you look at social isolation or rural isolation? There would be a lot of farmers living in very remote areas of the country. Did you look at that? Or did you survey any of them?
We have asked that before, and we did. Yeah. We have a whole piece around mental health within the document, And when we asked farmers if they did have a problem or an issue, would they know who to talk to? And we phrased the question quite broadly, as in, we weren't talking about a medical, we're talking about a friend or a neighbour or a family member. And 42% of the farmers said they were unsure or didn't know who to talk to if they had a problem. And that was kind of quite high, so. Yeah, it is interesting and when we asked that type of question in previous years, we used to actually ask for farmers to give a comment, just general comments at the end of the survey, if you know what I mean. And we were actually surprised in the last couple of years the amount of people that stated that farming was lonely and different things like that. It was kind of sad, if you know what I mean, in a way. People there is a sector of society out there in farming that are finding it quite hard and very isolating out there.
Right, and You know, it's surprising that you say that you were surprised that farmers would say they're lonely, given that, you know, the majority of farmers now, definitely farmers that are farming, we'd say up to nearly 200 acres, you know, they're really farming on their own.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, they these days, to have a full-time income from a farm, like, I suppose, yes, the size of it used to be, say, like 100 acres, a greater family.
Yeah.
Not quite sure that's the case anymore these days. But like, I should probably say it's definitely not the case. Very hardly done, like. But, it is, like, I suppose COVID has kind of thrown everything up in the air, like. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see when we come out of COVID, will we be able to re-engage with those people and get them back involved in the community? Because it is very important, like, I mean. We talk about rural Ireland, and there's a lot of talk about rural Ireland and this and that, like. But I mean, you see about post offices closing, banks closing, and so forth, like. And I suppose it is very important that the community involvement is kept, both for the farmers and for the people who live in the countryside.
Right. And then looking at farming itself as a profession, you said that part of it is performing extremely well. Would IFAC have any problems with any of the commodities as far as, the farmer making a living?
Well, dairy has been strong. It was strong last year, strong again this year. Like, I mean, when we asked farmers how do they feel their farmers providing providing the family with enough income as such, if you know what I mean, like, and a full-time income, like, and only one out of four dairy farmers stated it wasn't, whereas 9 out of 10 beef farmers said that it wasn't contributing enough to the family income. And I suppose that's kind of the nature of beef, of livestock farming at the moment. Quite a bit of it is part-time for that reason. I suppose dairy has got a little bit of a shock in the last week, 10 days, I mean, with the Glanbia announcement, and it's not so much what Glanbia are announcing, it's the wider implication of why Glanbia did it and what that could possibly mean for the future of the dairy sector, like the ability to expand. I mean, we see within IFAC a lot of our dairy clients, a lot of dairy farmers across the country are quite highly geared. They've borrowed, they've bought land, they've built parlour sheds and so forth, and that was based on the presumption of being able to milk cows. So I suppose the Antashka announcement with Glanbia, I wouldn't say it's paused for thought, if not, I mean, as in it's kind of people are kind of, well, we're on a second now, can I do what I was planning to do, like. And so there is, and with the Climate Action Bill coming out now, the Minister was actually only on the Countrywide this morning talking about it as well. 2021 will be an interesting year as regards the direction of farming. It could shape a lot of things for years to come.
I presume there's a chapter in it with regard to Brexit. How has that fed into the farming community?
Well, Brexit, 95% of them felt that it would have an impact on their farms, like. And there was no surprise of that, like, considering how closely aligned, especially the beef sector, into it. But at the moment, we're not quite seeing that. I suppose what you hear on the ground, like, from the farming level, like, logistically now, it's complicated getting into the UK. But it hasn't quite fed through yet, I suppose, on the prices. We're not quite sure. And look, that was always the thing about Brexit. No one really knows. So really, the impacts of Brexit on farming will be the realities will come out over time. It'll be years, if you know what I mean, because as things change, they're already negotiating the Northern Ireland Protocol. So time will tell on Brexit as we track to see what will happen, like. But I mean, at no stage was there an upside to it, and I don't think there ever will be an upside to Brexit, but it'll just be a case of what the actual impact will be.
Rightio, if a client came in to you then based on the findings in the survey for 2020 and they said, oh, look, there's a farm out the road, it's going for, you know, there's 200 acres in it or close to 80 hectares, would you advise them to buy it?
It depends, because everyone's personal circumstances are different, so it depends. Like, I mean, if they were borrowing 100% for it, and they were expecting the land that they were buying to pay for the land, if you know what I mean. So, in other words, you're buying 100 acres and you're expecting that 100 acres to generate the income to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to make the sum of that up in those sorts of scenarios. Like, the types of farmers we sign by land, a lot of them would have probably cash reserves, if you know what I mean. So, there'd be a fair chunk of their own cash going into it. It's an addition onto an existing farm. Or else they it's not the land itself that's going to generate income, it's the entire farm that's going to generate the income. Or else you see that there's outside money, and they've off-farm income or other income that comes through it. But, you know, especially in our neck of the woods, Jim, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, I mean, there's land going around our areas for land can go up to 14, 15, 16,000 euros an acre. Very hard to see an acre in itself paying for itself, you know what I mean, without it. without it being a part of a broader enterprise or other money coming into the business.
One last question to you, Philip, and it's this. Somebody listening to us this morning would like to lay hands on the report. Where can they get it?
Yep, well, the report's available at www.ifac.ie, or it's on our, if you Google it or Facebook or whatever, we're on social media and that sort of stuff. It's available. It's available to download, and they say there's lots of interesting figures. Actually, an interesting figure I should have mentioned is, Jim, is the succession.
Yeah.
Come to farmers that don't have wills.
Yeah.
We asked how many farmers have wills, and 40% of them said they didn't, which was really quite alarming. So we would always advise every client, every farmer, to make a will. Should always have a will in place.
And okay, and I'll just something I forgot to ask you as well. Did you only survey your own clients, or did you survey other farmers that are not clients of IFAC?
No, we surveyed across. So we surveyed our own clients, but it was also made available to the general public through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So it was made available, but the majority of the clients would have been IFAC clients, it would be fair to say.
Okay, well, look at Philip, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Listeners, that was Philip O'Connor from IFAC talking about their annual farm report. And if you want to read it in detail, why not log on to the IFAC website and you will find it there, and you can download it and read all about it. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Tim O'Donovan, and I suppose those of you who have been listening to me down through the years will remember I used to be talking to Tim quite a lot when he was with Chagas, and particularly on the tillage side. But on last week's Farmer's Journal, there was an article with Tim in it. It's got to do with what we are now calling Arable April. And I'm quite sure some of you have seen it. And if you haven't and you get the journal online, you'll be able to go back and have a look at it. And Tim is with me this morning to talk about Arable April and tillage in general. And you may or you may not know that Tim is currently with Seed Tech. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Jim. How are you? And thanks very much for having me on the show.
Great to have you back. Sure. I think the last time I met you was at a grass seed event, was it?
That's right, yeah. We would have been running into each other there on and off, yeah.
On and off. Unfortunately, with the way things are now, we never run in, and we don't run into anybody. We're all stuck at home.
Okay. Maybe not for too much longer, Jim.
I hope not. Tim, Arable April and your piece in the Farmer's Journal.
Yeah, so look, Seed Tech, we're delighted to be involved in this competition, Jim. So it's a photography competition, and anyone who has a nice picture of something happening in a tillage field, or maybe even some bees or that going around oilseed rape, or maybe someone who's looking after their fertilizer, spreading fertilizer. It's all to do with sustainability in the tillage business. And over the last year, I suppose, Jim, there's been a number of things have come together that we feel are positive for the tillage business going forward. I suppose, look, we're lucky in that the tillage industry isn't being given the bad press of recent that maybe dairy and beef has in livestock in terms of nitrates directive, issues with milk supply and so on and so forth, and environmental issues. And the tillage industry, we're putting our chest out and we're going to put our best foot forward as to what we can offer the Department of Agriculture, the government and the general public in terms of protecting the environment going forward.
Right. So basically you're getting involved then, Tim, in tillage friendly with the Irish government and tillage going green.
Yeah, I suppose, look, the Department of Agriculture are going to launch their CAP 2023 reform discussion documents in the middle of the summer. The Department of Agriculture launched a Ag Climatise Bill back there in December. And all of this, Jim, is coming from the European Union's Green Deal policy and their Farm to Fork documents.
Yeah.
And I suppose all of this is stemming from the the whole climate change challenge, the biodiversity challenge, the nitrates challenge. And I mean, look, what I would say to people is, like, a lot of people are looking at these in the tillage industry and they're saying, well, I mean, we're going to be hit with various rules and regulations. But when you look at the documents and you read the detail on them, the European Union and the Department of Agriculture have actually been very much vocal in their policies as to protecting the income of the primary producers. So whatever systems they come up with in place, or whatever policies they come up with in terms of climate change, nitrates directive, etc., they have stated that they are going to maintain the incomes of the primary producers. So from that perspective, I think often with these documents, Jim, that come out of the European Union, they have a long-term view.
Yeah.
I suppose they're unlike a government in that they have a long-term view. So they're looking at 2030, 2040, 2050. But my experience of these things in my roles in agriculture have said that when the European Union kind of set a course, they rarely deviate from it, but they just take a long time to get there.
Okay, so we're beginning now to talk about the Ag Climatized Bill. You're also looking at the industry is demanding carbon mitigation. So tillage is going to feed into this in quite a big way.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I think I've seen a government document on agriculture that actually prioritised tillage farming as a priority, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And it was quite, you know, I mean, actually, look, I mean, in the last month, Jim, people have heard about this straw incorporation scheme or a straw chopping scheme.
Yes.
I mean, if you were to talk about that 5 years ago, people would think that you were fit to be committed. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, this is something that's happened. The Department of Agriculture have committed $10 million to the straw chopping scheme for 2021 and 2022. So that's $10 million per year. They've committed another $3 million to the protein crop scheme. And if you were to look at Scotland, Denmark, Sweden, there's a lot of countries, Wales, have come out with all their climatized bills as well in the last 12 months. But all of those countries are actually copying what Ireland is doing. So the Department of Agriculture are ahead of the game on this one, and they are prioritizing tillage. And certainly the other countries are following behind. So I would expect that there will be more tillage-friendly policies over the next number of years as the announcements happen. I suppose, look, another thing there is the fact that we have a big industry demand for the raw ingredients on the tillage industry. I mean, you know, if you go, you know, when we can go abroad again, Jim, you know, your Jemison, Kerrygold, your Flavin's Oats, all of those well-known brands that are abroad, and they're all based on raw ingredients that are coming ultimately from the tillage industry. So despite the pandemic, there still has been reasonable demand for malting barley. There has been the same for the other ingredients that we're talking about, especially for the oats. So there are positives there for the industry.
Talking about the industry and getting back, I suppose, to CTEC itself. Now, you've quite a few initiatives as well to feed into this trend of making, you know, tillage more green-friendly or more environmentally friendly.
Yeah, well, it's not just green-friendly, Jim. It's about, look, people have this buzzword called sustainability. Everyone is talking about it. And an awful lot of people, including myself, the first time you hear it, you're kind of going, well, what's that about? But I suppose, look, what I've learned about sustainability is the most important thing is that the first pillar or the first thing you should talk about sustainability is profit. And, I mean, if we're not going to be in profit as an industry, we can forget about sustainability. So, like, the man or woman that's out there ploughing, tilling and so on this week and last week, they need to be in profit going forward. So our business in CTEC is to help growers have varieties that are suitable to their business, have suitable varieties for the end users, such as the cooperatives, the merchants that are out there, and have varieties then that fit in with policy framework that the Department of Agriculture and the European Union are actually going to impose on us. So look, we've been very much before in terms of hybrid technology, the hybrid barleys, the hybrid rye, and hopefully we'll have hybrid wheat in the future. All of those hybrid technologies are actually for lower inputs, more robust, reliable yield, and also in terms of quality. So that's one side of it, Jim. I suppose, look, the other side of it is that we've produced certain species or certain varieties that have kind of, you know, lasted the pace of time, such as the Husky Oats, has been there now for 11, 12 years. We have brought in a couple of new things then recently. The first, I suppose, and I suppose the one that makes the news straight away, is that we have this BYDV, or virus yellows tolerant winter barley, and that's called KWS Joyu, and that's been on the market now over the last year.
Yeah.
But it will be stepped up again. Sorry, Jim, go on.
Yeah, no, I keep going, sorry.
Yeah, and then, look, another thing that we're doing is we're talking to the end users, such as the maltsters. So we have brought winter malt and barley varieties back into Ireland, and those winter malt and barley varieties, some of your growers in certainly towards the Kilkenny border side of Tip might be growing some of those called Craft. And then lastly, in terms of faba beans, we've always been involved in faba beans and seed tech, but what we've done recently is we've tried to bring forward these altered fatty acid faba beans, such as low visine, convisine varieties. And the whole idea of those varieties is that they take the anti-nutritional problems out of faba beans. So if a merchant was to decide in the morning, oh, I'd like to include more faba beans in my diet and less soya beans from South America because there's an environmental problem there, then these low-visine, co-visine faba beans can be used in pig and poultry diets a little bit more. They can all be used in cow and cattle diets. And there's actually even an export market to the Mediterranean countries, Jim, that if somebody wanted to try it, these low-visine, co-visines are very, very adapted for there as well. So I suppose, look, overall, what we're trying to do is make sure that our varieties are relevant to the grower, the end user, and fit in with policy. And I think, you know, with the government, with the industry looking for the raw ingredients, and I suppose, Jim, with the way that the biodiversity is being hit upon us, I think the tillage industry has a lot to stand up for, and I don't think we should be behind the door when CAP 2023 is being announced.
Okay, well, look, thank you ever so much for talking to us this morning, and just to remind my listeners again, Tim, if anybody is interested in SeedTech seeds, the various varieties that you have, how did they make contact with you?
Well, sure, look, it's all on our website, Jim, seedtech.ie. That's simple enough. Or look, they can contact the office, or the Arable April is included on the online version of the Farmers Journal. And if somebody, as I said, is to have a nice picture that they're taking some morning or some evening, maybe at the sunset and over a field of barley or a field of wheat, enter that picture online, and there's a €500 weather station available. So you can't be too far away from weather data, Jim, but certainly with this weather station that we're offering as a prize, you'll be right up to date.
Rightio, Tim. And is there a closing date on that photographic competition?
The last days of April, Jim.
Okay. That, listeners, was Tim O'Donovan from SeedTech. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Matthew Ryan, and I haven't interviewed Matthew in the past because he's new to Chagas in the Thurles area. Good morning, Matthew, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, Matthew, you're with me to talk about grass and the growing of it and all issues around it. So, you know, it has been a very challenging spring for most farmers trying to manage stock and manage grass due to the very mixed weather we have. For our listeners who might be in a position of being still in the first round of grazing, which was delayed, and they may not have as much of the farm grazed as they might like. What key tips and advice have you for these people in this situation?
Jim, look, it was a fairly poor February this year, followed by a mixed March and then a cold April, to say the least, which made grazing challenging across the country from a beef farmer perspective, but also from a dairy farming perspective as well. Look, nearly every tool in the bag of grazing tricks was used this year to try and address the issue and make the best of the tricky situation. You know, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, and I suppose we live and learn from it. The weather ultimately was the boss in the end. Look, we've been truly fortunate there now in the last 2 weeks with the weather. We had to help address the situation and get back on track. That being said, for those who were late turning out stock, they seem to naturally be in a position with plenty of grass.
Mm-hmm.
And that naturally has its pluses and naturally has its minuses when you're trying to plan the coming weeks in order to get control of pre-grazing yields, to get control of quality, and naturally to aim to improve animal performance on grass. If your listeners are in this position with plenty of grass or borderline too much grass and are still in the first round, then your challenge is to get through as much grass as possible, as quickly as possible, by keeping an eye on farm regrowth. And the reason I say this is that the grass plan, as we all know, starts to head out around mid-May, which is only about 2 to 3 weeks away, which is not long at all, you know, blinking, you're nearly there. Between now and then, the grass plant will be heading into its reproductive stage, which will result in huge growth rates if the weather and if the soil conditions are right. You know, once we start to get near mid-May and the stem starts to appear, you know, you could end up very quickly with a cover of low-quality grass, which will hit on performance if you're behind. Look, your listeners will know all too well that those heavy kind of semi-covers will be slower bouncing back in terms of regrowths. And if the average farm grass cover gets too far ahead of us, those stronger paddocks will more than likely be hitting that four leaf stage and maybe start to head out. And so that could cause animal performance issues, feed quality issues, but it could also cause a grass supply issue in late May, early June, mm-hmm. kind of going into the third round. Yeah. The other issue, I suppose, we could have, Jim, is if we non-intentionally kind of graze some of the regrowth in these fields as a result in staying in them too long, which again could potentially further compound the problem for your listeners. So, look, I suppose the key messages here, Jim, is look, if you're somebody who's still in the first ground and you know, with plenty of grass, you know, clean out those paddocks as best as you can, get down to around that 3.5 centimetre mark, you know, shave the field as best you can, get through those fields as quickly as you can, reduce the concentrate as much as you can if you have too much grass. Silage should not be in the diet if you're behind in the first round and have plenty of grass. Again, the advice is always the same. Monitor regrowth, monitor farm cover, keep a sharp eye on the pre-grazing quality in the next maybe 2, 3, 4 paddocks. It's a great time now to tackle those wet, kind of tricky paddocks, you know, in case the weather turns. And don't be afraid if you've got too much grass to maybe take out a paddock or two for bales, you know, to speed up the area cleaned off and gain a bit of momentum if you're behind. Like, them bales will always come in handy if weather conditions turn, and in fairness, if they're good quality grass and cutting, they'll be good quality feed during the winter.
Okay. On the other hand, Matthew, there are listeners who are probably very fortunate to have enough to get out early this year due to the various reasons. These people may be on track in terms of the second rotation and grass supply in the farm. What key messages would you have for those people this morning?
Okay, so Jim, look, we all know the first few weeks of April, you know, haven't yielded the growth rates we usually expect, but overall the national grass situation seems to be relatively okay. Now, you'll have variances on that at farm level. Some people on dry stock farms are on target, as they may have been out earlier this spring. Naturally, this could be the result of a lot of factors which we won't go into today. But look, for those people, the advice is not hugely different. You know, again, it's all about clean out, setting up the paddock for the next round. So get those 4 centimetre clean outs. They're crucial. Keep the pre-grazing yield between 1,300 and 1,400 kilos of dry matter, which is roughly 2.5 to 3 fistfuls of grass, or 4 inches of grass, or 10 centimetres high of grass, whichever metric you use. Like, the old school saying of keeping that grass short and sweet kind of springs to mind. Like, it's still accurate today, and it's more relevant than ever from an environmental point of view as well. Keep a sharp eye on days ahead or farm cover, whichever method you use. You know, target a farm cover of around 700, 750 kilos of dry matter per hectare or 11 to 13 days ahead, depending on your stocking rate. When you're in the second round, target, you know, of 18 to 21 day rotation should be strongly considered based on your beef farming system or even your dairy farming system in that case. You know, keep an eye also on those paddocks that you're going around that were grazed 5 to 7 days ago. Are they showing signs of regrowth or not? Is that leaf starting to come through? And that will tell you whether or not you can contain or continue with the current rotation speed. Like the simple motto on a beef farm of, you know, try and grow it in 3 weeks and graze it in 3 days is a useful guide, and you won't go too far wrong. You know, keep it simple. And again, like the last question, don't be afraid to react early in a surplus case, you know, to take out a paddock, even if it's only at a grazing cover, because it'll bounce back quicker, and you'll also have super feed for the winter, or maybe super feed if things get tight and you have to do a bit of feeding out. Like in 5 to 7 days at this time of the year, you know, a lot can change at farm level in terms of quality, and we cannot, if we're serious about getting animal performance and grass performance, we cannot compromise on quality. So we have to do everything we can to get these results, but keep it simple. Keep it very, very simple.
Matthew, then, with that in mind, what sort of advice would you have for the listeners in regard to chemical fertiliser for the coming weeks? Should they go out with straight nitrogen or switch to a compound?
So I suppose, Jim, when you're deciding on fertiliser to use at this time of the year, and it's like any time of the year, you must revert to your soil samples of each field and your fertiliser allowance based on your fertiliser plan. Before you look at the fertiliser, check the line. Does it need to be addressed? Does it not? It can often get overlooked. You know, every farm has a completely different fertiliser allowance. The last thing you want to do is to put out the wrong fertiliser type, not only and get a poor response, but the last thing you want to do is to put out a fertiliser type that you may not have an allowance for from a nitrates point of view.
Yeah.
You know, some people have a high P allowance, some have little to none based on soil fertility and soil types such as peat. So keep it compliant, because the last thing we want is a penalty. I suppose if I was in a situation and I had a choice, Jim, for an allowance of a compound like 18-6-12 with sulfur at this time of the year, then I would be advising people to use a compound like this if no P and K has gone out yet. Look, straight nitrogen and all that is grand in early spring or for a field that's got a heavy, heavy coat of slurry, and if it's in index 3. But as we move into the second round and we aim for those high growth rate potentials, then we need to feed the plant with a little bit of P and K and sulfur for that plant to perform if it hasn't got P and K already. Like, a question that we often get asked is, you know, why is P and K more important now in the second round versus kind of like, you know, a month's time in the third or maybe even the fourth round down the line? I suppose if you think of it solely from a scientific point of view, you know, phosphorus is an essential element to allow plants to grow and complete their growth cycle. You know, you have to set up the plant to allow it to grow as normal. And if phosphorus is needed for cell functions such as energy transfer, you know, for ATP and cell division for growth, but it's also needed for germination and rooting. And I suppose helping a plant to establish a good root structure as we move into these drier months will be beneficial for your listeners, you know, to increase tolerance to dry spells on our farms. Don't forget about K, because K, on the other hand, is still one of the big three nutrients. You know, it's vital in terms of activating enzymes useful for plant growth, but it's also important in the movement of starches and sugars inside in the plant, and it's also important for those silage crops to prevent lodgings. So it's a key nutrient as well. The one that we often can overlook very easily when we're buying fertilizers at this time of the year, and especially on drier soils, is the importance of sulfur. You know, sulfur is often forgotten, and it's vital in terms of the formation of those amino acids in the plant, which are the building blocks of protein. And look, sulfur together with nitrogen are used together. There's a strong link between the two, and you know, it's very important to increase, to have the sulfur out to increase nitrogen use efficiency, which at farm level will give you a better bang for the buck. You know, a little less than opposed to sulfur. I suppose for those reasons, Jim, like a bag of 18-6-12 to the acre on a relatively moderately stocked farm would nearly be more than enough. But if you're moving into those significantly higher stock farms or derogation type farms, if the allowance is there, you might be going with a bag and a half to 2 bags. Or if not, you might go out with slurry using less applications and try and get that slurry out on an overcast day if the conditions are there. So those overcast days, if we'll say, like, you're trying to decide whether or not to turn the wiper or not. So if you can't go out with 18-6-12 or if you can't go use story. If you can't go with story, go with something negating 6-12.
And one last question to you this morning, Matthew. And why do we aim for an 18 to 21 day round and not a much longer round?
So I suppose, Jim, if we need to clarify why we target this 21 day round, and we often say, you know, target 21 day round and no more than 2 to 3 days per grazing on the beef farm. So we've got to go back to the basics here. Look, if you had an average growth rate at this time of the year, average field conditions, and you take the ryegrass plant, that plant should produce its first leaf 7 days after grazing. Can be as low as 5 days if conditions are perfect. So 7 days after that, then the second leaf should be fully appeared. And 7 days after that, again, we should be at the third leaf stage. So the stage refers to the leaf being fully emerged. By the time we kind of hit 18, 21 days, we should be at that 2.5 to 3 leaf stage, which is perfect for grazing. And I suppose if you compare this to the kind of spring or autumn systems, you know, it could be 30 to 40 days to produce a new leaf versus 7, kind of when you get to summer grazing. So the other thing to bear in mind, and why we advise these 18, 21 day rounds, is when the plant kind of hits the 3 leaf stage, it can only sustain 3 leaves at a time. Once the fourth leaf starts to grow, the first leaf starts to die off. And you'll often see that if you pick up a plant that's in a field that's going a little bit too strong, you'll see it's the first leaf, the closest one to the ground, starts to turn yellow. And so that's when it's at the fourth leaf stage. It can be harder to graze, it can be a little bit more stemmy. And once this decay happens, the quality drops. You know, and you'd often see people or hear people talking about fields that they've grazed where animal performance dropped. You look at the field as kind of a whiter base to it.
We're running out of time, but there are two dates that are very important coming up. And I suppose you might remind my listeners of those.
Absolutely, Jim. Look, the beef's deadline for anyone listening is for that sucker farmer or from a beef farming background, and also is the calf to beef scheme is applicable to dairy farmers as well. The deadline for that is the 26th of April. And also for anybody looking to do the online green cert, the online green cert is now open for application in the Turles office, which is starting in autumn. So please contact the Turles office.
And I suppose, Matthew, we should just remind people that the basic farm payments deadline will come very quickly as well. It's around the middle of May.
That's right, Jim, 17th of May.
Yeah, okay. Well, look at Matthew. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Matthew Ryan, who is a beef advisor with Chagas in Turles. Listeners, my next guest this morning is the chairperson of the Farm Business Committee, National Farm Business Committee of the IFA, Rosemary McDonough. And Rosemary is with me this morning to talk about a couple of issues, and one of them in particular, which is of great concern to all of us at the moment, and that is the closure of banks. Basically, at this stage, there's only two main banks left. Good morning, Rosemary, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to all your listeners. And thank you very much for having me on. Yes, it is a big issue. It is a big concern for IFA and for everybody on the ground and in the country that we have such issues with banks at the moment. Between Ulster Bank leaving, KBC leaving as well, and then we have the closure of some Bank of Ireland branches. So, I mean, all in all, it's really reducing the banking facilities that are in rural Ireland. And it's also reducing competition, that there's less competition out there. And I suppose people now see it, and rightly so, that it's between AIB and Bank of Ireland. So from a competition point of view, that's an issue as well. And also from but the rural community and people wanting to go to the bank, not everybody is tech savvy and is able to do everything online. Some people still like to go to the bank and, you know, meet a bank official and do some banking, especially if they're, you know, looking for a loan or whatever, that they want to meet somebody and to be able to discuss the application or the terms and conditions or the information that they have to gather to process, you know, whatever they want to try and do in the bank. So it's nice to be able to meet somebody. And I suppose there is a certain amount of talk that there will be some work done with the post office network, and that I think AIB already have the facility, and Bank of Ireland will probably be able to have that as well, where you can do lodgements or withdrawals at the post office. But, I mean, I do think that there will need to be some infrastructural changes and some resources put into the post office network to be able to, you know, allow them to take on this extra work and do the business. But also we have the credit unions. They're another good option for people. They offer, you know, counter service, and they have longer opening hours. So that a lot of people are actually finding it very handy to be able to go to the credit union and do some banking in the credit union.
Yeah, but if we go to the credit union, we're basically talking about just personal banking, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not in the business of, we'd say, giving a substantial loan to a farmer for a major development, or indeed, for that matter, to go and buy a piece of very expensive machinery, whatever the case may be. Yeah. Their loans are up to 50 grand, isn't that correct?
Yeah, they are. Some of them are up to 50,000, but some of the other credit unions, they've all moved on in different stages. So you have, we'll say, I'm in Galway now, and you have St. Charlotte's Credit Union, based out of, we'll say, Toom and the Galway area, where there's different branches. And I think those, they do loans up to the 100,000. But different size credit unions have different, limits, we'll say.
Yeah.
And even a lot of the credit unions down in Cork now, I know I had a meeting with them, and they were saying that they have done very, very well. They have loaned out maybe three times more than they had expected to do in their first year. And they now are actually coming close to the limit that they're allowed loan out because of the regulation that's on them as well. But yeah, going back to the banks, I mean, we just have really the two main banks. We are constantly in IFA and any meetings that we have driving home with them. So we need competition in the sector. We need competitive rates. And in that, they're constantly telling us that the rules of the amount of reserves that they have to hold for the loans that they have out is too high. And that's a symptom of the crash that we had and the downturn. But we've made the point to them several times that, like, times have moved on. We've had so much regulation that we're told also as part of the cost of credit in the last number of years, and we've had to pay for that indirectly. And with all that regulation, you would think that we're so well regulated now, and that we have improved so much and so much time has passed, that you think that, we'll say, you're talking about downturn back in maybe 08, that we are 12, 13 years on now, that there could be a little bit of relaxation on those rules. And we've tried to put some pressure on the central bank that there might be some talks. And the most they have said, I suppose, really, is that there needs to be kind of discussions from the ground up as to what's needed in banking and what the customers of the banks need, rather than looking at it from the top level at the banks down. So at least that's one commitment.
Okay.
That we have got.
Just getting back to IFA members in general, have you had much reaction from the membership with regard to the closure of the banks? You mentioned the post offices. Now, post offices are closing all over the country as well. As the years go by, we seem to be getting further and further away from a bank branch or a post office.
Yes, I agree with you. Yeah, we had a huge amount of calls in IFA, absolutely, into all the committees. With the reaction of the branch closures, that there are some counties so much more affected than others. I mean, all counties are affected, but we'll say, take Donegal, for instance, something like 10 branches have closed in Donegal. So it has had a huge impact on rural Ireland and on anybody living in rural Ireland. And even from the point of view of the towns and the businesses in those towns, it'll have an effect there as well, because it'll reduce the footfall into those towns.
Of course.
And the footfall will, you know, impact on business. So, yeah, we've had many, many calls. We've had a lot of concerned customers and banks. But I suppose what's been said at the minute, take the Ulster Bank ones, because they would have quite a substantial agricultural loan book,
mm-hmm.
that that's going to be on a phased basis, and it could take a number of years. And I suppose the word there was, you know, if you have a good deal at the minute, that will be bought by one of the other banks. And, you know, there's no need to rush out yourself going making any changes. That, you know, whatever contract you have with Ulster Bank at the minute, that will be, we'll say, bought by, you know, AIB or PTSB. And your, you know, terms and conditions will remain the same. But, I mean, that is if you're in, we'll say, a fixed rate for whatever length of time. But once the fixed rate would be up, you come to an end of term, then you're back to negotiations again. And that goes back to the point of no real competition in the sector. You're down to just two banks.
And what then is your stance and the IFA stance on Ulster Bank selling on the non-performing loans?
Absolutely, we have concerns about that, and we have raised that issue. Any chance we get, we raise that issue. We're constantly, on fingers on the button and on the pulse with non-performing loans. We would be hoping that, that they would not be sold to a vulture fund, that they would be taken over by whatever banking structure has taken it over, and that people will always be given the opportunity to restructure the debt and, to be able to, pay it back, on a longer term, use the finances of the firm or whatever other incomes that are there, that they would be able to try and, renegotiate the terms. Because we don't want to see, any farm sold or any dwelling houses as well being sold. That would be a huge concern for IFA and for our members, for anybody that has any of those non-performing loans. And even for people that just, for one reason or another over the years, might have missed a payment or might have, maybe smaller loans or whatever that they did settle. But all of that comes to the credit register, which is a new body mm-hmm. where all of the banking sector check out on people, on your credit rating, on your credit history, how good your credit history is. And, that's all taken into account now these days for loans and for banking. But even going back to the non-performing loans, like we would have concerns as well there over, title deeds of farms or of land that went in as security. And, if in the worst case scenario the whole of farm was down as security, then that person is tied to, be it the bank or the vulture fund, that they're finding it very, very hard to get, working capital or loans or credit elsewhere because their security is tied up with the non-performing loan and the bank that's linked with that. So it does create many, many issues and many challenges.
Right. And Rosemary, then, your advice to a farmer that is with any one of the two banks that are closing, what should they be doing now with regard to how they're going to bank into the future?
Well, I suppose for any farmer that's with any of those banks, I suppose they should look around, they should price around, they should talk to any of the other banks themselves. If they have a current account with Ulster Bank, mm-hmm. they need to probably go to some other bank to see. It's loans that can be sold. But I think if you have a current account, you may need to open a current account with another, one of the banks yourself. So I suppose the best thing is to ask around, to price it, to look into the other banks to see what your options are. Some farmers might have been banking with maybe two banks, but take your time and... Yeah. Try and get an appointment or go in and talk to the bank, or at least sit down with the computer and look it up online and see what the options are. There's different options there for you can go in and there's a switcher if you're trying to switch accounts or whatever.
Yeah.
But basically they're saying there's no need to rush, but do whatever pricing around you have. You don't have to move things yourself. They will be moved in the transition. But if you want to price around for a current account or for fees or charges or whatever, you can. Anyone can go in and price around and have a look at it. And go talk to the banks, but to see, what securities you have and where they are.
Yeah, so in other words, your advice is take your time, have a good look, do your research, and then make your decision. That's basically what you're saying. Yeah. Okay,
definitely,
I know we were to talk about other matters, but we're out of time. I want to thank you ever so much for joining us this morning, Rosemary. Thanks, Emil. That, listeners, was Rosemary McDonough, who is the Farm Business Chairperson with the Irish Farmers Association. That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you will join me, Jim Finn, at the same time next week for another AgriPort on Tip FM. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock, and after that, Eamon Dwyer presents Down Your Way.